Thank you, John Guy, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. Like to thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Gandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa has set up a committee to clear Zimbabwe's $10 billion debt blamed for stifling economic development.
Its objective is to find ways and means of clearing the areas that we owe, clearing those areas is critical so that the Zimbabwe can obtain long-term financial resources from those institutions.
Results of a survey on voter registration and related issues in Zimbabwe show that the majority of youths are not interested in elections.
After observing the 2008 elections, I found out that it was worthless to spend my time in a queue just to vote in an election that I know that it will be rigged.
And a youth-oriented reproductive health action team says Zimbabweans should try to use HIV self-testing kits, which will give people additional options in knowing their HIV status.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa has set up a committee to clear Zimbabwe's $10 billion debt blamed for stifling economic development. Central Bank Chief John Mangudya will chair the committee, which will also comprise officials from the Ministry of Finance, African Development Bank, International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank. Zimbabwe's foreign and domestic debt has undermined the country's creditworthiness and compromised its ability to secure new funding due to the fact that most of it is now in arrears.
Economists say much of the borrowing has been for consumption rather than production, implying that the debt is not being used to grow the economy. Last year, the International Monetary Fund's head of mission to Zimbabwe, Dominic Farnese, said while the country was not going to get debt relief from multilateral institutions, there was room for flexible payment plans and terms. Reserve Bank Governor Mangudya told Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that clearing arrears is key for economic development.
Its objective is to find ways and means of clearing the arrears that we owe. Clearing those arrears is critical so that the Zimbabwe can obtain long-term sustainable resources, financial resources from those institutions. Once the arrears are cleared, it means that the World Bank, IMF and ADB will be able to provide Zimbabwe with a long-term and low-price facilities that will be able to use by the country to develop the country going forward. In other words, it's for sustainability of the country.
But we understand the government is a bit cash-strapped at the moment. What are your options? How do you plan to clear this debt?
That's precisely the point why the committee was set up, to find the ways and means of looking for financial resources to clear those areas. So what they're asking is exactly our terms of reference, find money to clear the areas. And there are many options. And those options are that one you are going to look into. See how best, which option you should utilize. So yes, what you are saying, yes, we don't have money right now. But the question is, as you are aware, Zimbabwe is an asset-rich country, and therefore we need to find in all options that is made available to us, which we know about, to clear the areas.
Is HIPIC an option on the table?
No, it's not on the table.
Why not?
Because we don't believe that tourism, the first thing that we do not qualify under HIPIC. Currently, we do not qualify under HIPIC, and therefore we cannot use the option when you do not qualify. Secondly, because we don't qualify, it means that we also need to utilize what is available to ensure that we achieve that
purpose. That was Reserve Bank Governor John Mangudya speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. Zimbabwe owes $2.4 billion to the five major Paris Club creditors, namely Germany, France, United Kingdom, Japan, and the United States of America.
Results of a survey on voter registration and related issues in Zimbabwe show that although 80% of the population is interested in elections and 75% are registered to vote, the majority of youths are not interested in elections at all. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
The survey conducted by the Mass Public Opinion Institute on behalf of the Elections Resource Center, or ERC, showed that only 28% of the youths in the 18 to 25 years and 38% of the 26 to 35 year age groups are interested in elections, compared to more than 56% in the 61 plus age group. Harare resident 26-year-old John Skauke is among youths who have lost interest in national and local government elections. Sigauke says all current leaders do not inspire him to vote in any election.
After observing the 2008 elections, I found out that it was worthless to spend my time in a queue just to vote in an election that I know that it would be rigged. And also the fact that I didn't feel like inspired by whatever manifesto that the parties were offering to us.
Another Harare youth, 29-year-old Reason Piri, says he has lost interest in elections because they do not change anything in this country. Zimbabwe Democracy Institute Director Petsai Ruanya, who attended the unveiling of the survey results, says the findings are not surprising. He says youths have lost interest in politics as they are not getting any favorable results.
Politics is not providing them with opportunities. That's why they are not interested in this politics, because in some instances, politics is actually closing the doors for national development, closing the doors for their own empowerment, closing the doors for their own opportunities.
Other key findings of the survey are that people in rural areas are much more aware of what is required to register to vote than their urban counterparts. About 93% of those surveyed said they had access to election-related material, saying they got most of it from community meetings and state-owned radio stations like Radio Zimbabwe. Civil society organizations, or CSOs, at less than 1%, were insignificant in the dissemination of election-related information, despite receiving thousands of dollars from donors to cater for such activities. ERC Director Tawanda Chimini says this is not surprising, given that they are not allowed to freely carry out civic education.
Firstly, civil society space to conduct voter education with respect to registration and elections in general is generally closed. Yes, the law says you can do it, but you need approval from the Electoral Commission. And the invitation from the Electoral Commission normally comes late. The space within which the civil society then operates is very limiting, based on the provisions of Section 40C of the Electoral Act.
Zimrise Director Oke Machisa says while they cannot dismiss the survey's findings on civic society organizations, their findings do not reflect that some of the community meetings, which constitute the main source of elections information, were organized by CSOs.
I believe that the civil society in Zimbabwe has played a critical role in terms of information dissemination to the people of Zimbabwe, especially voter education. We have seen very little that has been done by ZEC. We have seen very little that has been done by the government of Zimbabwe.
Other findings are that while slightly more than half of the respondents are aware that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, is responsible for voter education, less than half do not trust it. The survey conducted between the 20th of February and the 5th of March this year involved 1,200 randomly selected adult respondents from the country's 10 provinces. It focused on specific issues such as awareness on voter registration, preferred mode of voter registration, participation and interest in elections, and awareness and trust in ZEC. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation today shared an insight of some of the programs they are conducting in the world, with particular emphasis on Africa, in empowering women and girls. Melinda Gates of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who was hosted by the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C., told guests at a one-day meeting in Washington, D.C., they will continue to invest in women and girls. Golden Makusha, a Zimbabwean who attended the event with her theme, Smart Women, Smart Power, Women and Girls, Engines of Development, tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye he was impressed by the presentation and hopes that he will be able to share the information with the Zimbabweans in the diaspora.
I think the major takeaway from there was the fact that they see the important role that women make in terms of economic development if they are given the means. So specifically, if we're talking for in agriculture, for instance, where she mentioned their experiences have been that if agricultural proceeds from the farm, smallholder farms, are channeled and managed by women, that money is more likely going to be used for economic development in the form of education for the kids and providing for healthcare in addition to providing for food for the family. Not that the fathers don't do it, but the mothers and the women are much more inclined to channel those resources towards those areas.
You are an organization that works with Zimbabweans in the diaspora. Are you going to be sharing some of these findings to some of the Zimbabweans in America and the other places where you work?
That is the main reason why I actually went to the function, in order to be able to learn what organizations are doing and then sharing with the rest of our Zimbabwean community. So I was saying we are going to use this information, disseminate it to our members who are interested in economic development, so that we can see where to channel most of our efforts in order to have the maximum impact for economic development, not only at a personal and family level, but also which will have cascading impact for the bigger picture in terms of the whole bigger economy as it goes.
That was Golden Makusha of the Zimbabwe Diaspora Network North America speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye in Washington, D.C. We will give you more details of this presentation tomorrow. Don't miss it here on Studio 7.
Say what? A youth-oriented reproductive health action team says Zimbabweans should try to use HIV self-testing kits, which will give people additional options in knowing their HIV status. The kits, which were introduced in the United States last year, allow a person to test for HIV using a gum swabbing device. The results are obtained within 20 minutes. A positive result, however, must be confirmed by a medical health professional. The health ministry indicated this year that it is running preliminary feasibility and accessibility tests for the product. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo speaks to Say What director Jimmy Wilford about this HIV testing method.
It needs also to be looked at and complemented by other comparison to other factors that can also result in some unintended consequences.
And looking at those unintended consequences, many say that having these self-testing kits might be problematic.
I think we need to appreciate that there has been a lot of work that has been done around the destigmatizing the society around issues to do with HIV and AIDS. Being HIV positive is not the end of the world, and we do have a lot of people that are currently living with HIV and those that have been living with HIV for the past 10 years or so. So for us now to talk about it being a consequence, it's also just a symptom again to say we are not necessarily appreciating the reality that we are living in, and not also doing our best in terms of really going to zero stigma. So we need to look at HIV being like any other illness.
Looking at the process after someone finds themselves HIV positive, which calls for another test in a health facility, but also counseling and treatment, do you think Zimbabwe will have the capacity?
While it is a welcome move, there is also need for the authorities, for the responsible authorities, to also consider what will happen after that, especially when you're talking about the demand. What that means is that government can come up with the clear mechanisms to say, even if you have a million people in need of this service, they can be able to get such services.
That was Say What director Jimmy Wilford speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
a Zimbabwean struggles to run a hairdressing business in South Africa.
Amnesty International criticizes the Zimbabwe government's stranglehold on radio.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
One soldier was shot dead in Burundi's capital Wednesday as police clashed with protesters demanding that President Pierre Nkurunziza not run for a third term.
The U.S. government has released scores of documents it said were recovered during the 2011 raid in Pakistan on the compound where U.S. forces killed Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden.
Islamic State fighters seized parts of the ancient Syrian town of Palmyra Wednesday, sparking fears that the militant group would destroy a priceless archaeological site.
North Korea says it has succeeded in miniaturizing a nuclear weapon, an accomplishment that, if confirmed, will represent a key step toward being able to place nukes on a missile.
Italian police say they've arrested a Moroccan man suspected of involvement in the March 18 attack on a Tunisian museum that left 22 people dead.
And Canadian police have detained 10 young people at Montreal's main airport on suspicion of preparing to travel overseas to join the Islamic State militant group.
Millions of Zimbabweans currently live in the diaspora due to various reasons, including the tense political situation in the country and economic challenges, among many other issues. They struggle for survival in some nations where they fight for menial jobs and top executive positions. In most cases, they settle for any job despite being armed with degrees and college diplomas. But in some cases, they rise to the top and end up operating lucrative businesses. There are some Zimbabweans like Gertrude Maganga, who operates a hairdressing salon in Pretoria, South Africa, currently trying to carve a niche for themselves in highly competitive industries. Maganga, who started living in South Africa in 2006, tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawuye she is failing to get a loan to smoothly run her business.
2008, that's when I started. I'm running in Pretoria in the Central Business Center.
Do you actually have premises where you operate, or where is your salon?
I'm renting from City Property. I have a premise at where I'm renting from City Property.
So how do you get your clients? We've seen that there has just been xenophobia in South Africa. How are you attracting your clients?
We have to go downstairs. Like, our salon is there in a flat in the building. It's 7th floor building. So we have to go downstairs with our placard showing the status of hair that we do and the hairstyles. So it's how you negotiate with your clients that will be passing inside the streets, how you negotiate. Then you bring your client upstairs, then you play. After finishing that client, you have to go downstairs again to fetch another one.
And what would you say has been your major challenge as a Zimbabwean woman trying to do business in South Africa?
Our major challenge is, like, we don't have union groups, even groups that are helping the Zimbabwean women. We don't have groups that are helping financially. Because you find you've got a lot of projects and ideas that you can do. There are a lot of chances and opportunities that you can do. But the thing that hinders us is capital. That is the one that we don't have any support from any other groups. We don't have meetings. We don't have representatives. And, like, if we look at, like, our counterparts from Nigeria, when they come here, they already have money to start business. So automatically they start business. So, like, where I am, I think I'm the only Zimbabwean woman who has a salon. Majority of the people that are here, they are Nigerians.
So would you say that you're making enough money to sustain your family? And how big is your family?
It's not enough because the economy also is changing here in South Africa. So it's not enough because there's no way that you expand. The little that you have, you spend mostly on rentals. Because the rentals here, they are very expensive. For us, we are staying here in town. I'm renting a salon here in town because it's safer in town, unlike in the location. Because if you look very well where the xenophobic attacks were being targeted, mostly it was in the location. So you prefer to stay in town, of which is very expensive for the rentals. All the money that you mostly make is almost spent on rentals, school fees, like we have to pay monthly.
How much are you paying for rentals?
Like in my shop, I'm paying 4,400 rand for my shop. I used to have a flat. I ended up letting it out because I couldn't afford it. It was almost 5,000 that I needed to pay for a two-bedroom flat. So right now I'm renting a single room and I'm paying 2,000 for that single room. So imagine I have to pay almost 6,000 for rentals only. School fees, I have to send my son, being the 9, I'm paying 600 every month. The little one, I'm not even sending him to crèche because I need to pay maybe 1,000 for him for crèche. So it's too much.
And are you married?
I'm a widow. My husband passed on in January 2012.
Where?
Here in South Africa. We had to bury him here because I couldn't afford to pay the 20,000 to send his baby home.
And what was the response of his parents?
They know how we have to be running around to make a living. So it's not like we are making a living. We are just surviving. So there's no way that they wouldn't understand. They had to understand.
Moving forward as a young Zimbabwean woman looking after a family by yourself, what would you like to see happen in future to make your life a little bit better?
What I would love to is to have a group that support women. I'm having a salon. I need capital to start a lot of things, to make perfumes, to buy hair pieces and sell inside that shop, to be selling a lot of products that you can sell. But the problem is capital, because we don't have access to these foreign banks that we can access loans and the whole stuff. Everything that we have to do, we have to pay cash. So if we have those groups that support us, that help us, even if it means it has to loan us, they'll be monitoring how we are progressing. Because we are business people, we know what we want, we know what we send, we know what people want. But the thing that you only know about it, but you can't even do it because of what? Of capital.
That was Gertrude Maganga, a Zimbabwean running a hairdressing salon, speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyawe from Pretoria in South Africa.
Residents of Harare's Mavuku and Tafara suburbs today teamed up with the city council and Lafarge Cement Zimbabwe Limited Company to conduct a cleanup campaign at a time when the local authority is failing to provide such services due to various challenges. Edith Matekaire, Marketing and Communications Executive of the Cement Processing Company, tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube the campaign resulted in the setting up of a waste management center.
We were launching a waste management campaign in a community that surrounds the Mabuku plant, and the area is Mabuku Tafara. So what we did was we identified over 80 anti-litter monitors who are to assist the community in waste management sorting, and also just encourage people to bring waste to a waste management center that was set up at Kamwene Center in Tafara, Mabuku. So for Lafarge Cement Zimbabwe, it's an initiative that we've been running as far back as 2007.
What really prompted you to actually embark on such a program?
A big percentage of our employees actually live in Mabuku Tafara because it's really just a walking distance from the plant. So we recognize that it's important that the neighborhood that they live in and the community that they live in is clean and it's safe and it's healthy, because that way we are also assured that they are healthy and they come to work healthy and safe.
So can we safely say that we have actually established what are called management waste centers?
This is the first one that we started, and we've really started because over the years when we've done cleanups, we've realized that it's not a sustainable way of managing waste in the community. So what we've done with this management waste center is to get a sustainable way in which the community can start to benefit by selling that waste and having some money which they can then sell back into the community.
That was Edith Matekaire, Marketing and Communications Executive of Lafarge Cement Zimbabwe Limited Company, speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Amnesty International says the Zimbabwe government's stranglehold on radio in the country and its refusal to issue licenses to those without links to the ruling party is a ploy to stifle freedom of expression. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare for VOA.
Since 2001, when the monopoly of the state broadcaster Zimbabwe Broadcasting Holdings legally ended, no independent radio stations have been allowed to operate. Only two companies, one owned by a government minister and another belonging to a state-owned media company, have been issued radio station permits. Now, Amnesty International has released a report detailing what it calls a crackdown on those who have been campaigning for the licensing of community radio stations. Debros Mchena, the Amnesty International Director for Southern Africa, said his organization had four recommendations to Harare on community radio stations. The first one being to ensure that Zimbabweans enjoy freedom of expression in line with the country's constitution.
We are saying the issuing of license must not be done in secret. The third recommendation is about removing the barriers in financial terms, which arises from the imposition of punitive fees structures for those who wish to establish community radio stations. And finally, we are looking at Parliament carrying out its constitutional mandate in the community radio sector. We wish Parliament to ensure that there should be revision of any obstacle that is still lying in the statute book so that Zimbabweans can enjoy their freedoms of expression.
On Tuesday, Jonathan Moyo, Information Minister, told Parliament that more radio licenses will be issued this year. Concerning community radio licenses, he said there are many who claim to represent community radio.
Individuals have set themselves up as communities, and they are calling themselves community radio this, community radio that. There are all sorts of associations that are claiming to be community radios.
Minister Moyo said it is still to be determined what is a community radio in Zimbabwe. Until that debate is closed, he said, no community radio station licenses will be issued. According to Amnesty International, at least 28 independent community radio initiatives in Zimbabwe are waiting to be licensed. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And in sports news, Zimbabwe cricket fans are expressing mixed views about the national team's tour to Pakistan for matches that have been snubbed by the International Cricket Council over security concerns. The Zimbabwe Sports and Recreation Council and the Foreign Affairs had also advised the team against touring, citing the same. But this week, Zimbabwe cricket threw all caution to the wind and flew to Pakistan, where it will play three ODIs and two 2020 matches starting Friday. Sports analyst Ezra Chisasmanda is one of those calling out Zimbabwe's cricket officials.
To allow their own people to travel, it clearly shows that we've got a government which doesn't even care about its own citizens, about its own people. A government was supposed to interfere and stop that, and maybe perhaps take advice from all international cricket nations who have said they cannot go to Pakistan at the moment. But why is Zimbabwe going there? There is something behind all this. There's no way the government of Zimbabwe should have let Zimbabwe cricket go to Pakistan.
And given Pakistan's, superior record in this game, how do you see Zimbabwe faring?
This is a tour which people should not read much on it, knowing the history of Pakistan cricket, which is marked with corruption, match fixing, and all that. We know there are Pakistan players who are right now in prison. Some are serving sentences for match fixing. You know the bookies at this time, when there are disturbances like this, they take advantage. What they do is they organize such games to make more money, because this is a game whereby they will earn so much all over the world fixing matches. I believe there's a deal between the Zimbabwe Cricket Union and the Pakistan cricket whereby they are saying, come, no matter what, we can make money.
That was independent sports analyst Ezra Chisasmanda on the line from London, speaking with Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when we'll be talking about garbage collection in Zimbabwe's cities and towns as our residents team up with a local company to collect trash.
And now to quickly recap today's top stories.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa has set up a committee to clear Zimbabwe's $10 billion debt, blamed for stifling economic development.
Results of a survey on voter registration and related issues in Zimbabwe show that the majority of youths are not interested in elections.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night.